Kshetra Gaya. Under the one who knows everything of the external body. Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances. Tuvyam. Unto you. Sarva. Everything. Adyakshaya. Who are superintending, managing. Sakshine, who are the witness, Paramatma or Antaryami. Purushaya, the Supreme Person. Atmamulaya, who are the original source of everything. Mula Prakritaye. Unto the Purusha avatar, the origin of Prakriti and Pradhana. Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances. So, translation, I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who are the Super Soul, the superintendent of everything, and the witness of all that occurs. You are the Supreme Person, the origin of material nature and of the total material energy. You are also the owner of the material body. Therefore, you are the Supreme Complete. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. You can repeat. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who are the Super Soul, the superintendent of everything, and the witness of all that occurs. You are the Supreme Person, the origin of material nature, and of the total material energy. You are also the owner of the material body. Therefore, you are the Supreme Complete. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Jai. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 13th chapter, text 3, the Lord says, Kshetragyam chapimam viti sarva kshetre shubharata. O sign of Bharata, you should understand that I am also the knower in all bodies. Every one of us is thinking, I am this body or this is my body. But actually the truth is different. Our bodies are given to us by the Supreme Proprietor. The living entity is also Kshetragya, or the knower of the body. He is not the body's only proprietor. The actual proprietor of the body is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Kshetragya. For example, we may rent and occupy a house, but actually the owner of the house is the landlord. Similarly, we may be allotted a certain type of body as a facility with which to enjoy this material world, but the actual proprietor of the body is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is called Sarva Dyoksha, because everything in the material world works under his supervision. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, the 9th chapter, text 10, wherein the Lord says, Maya Dyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. This material nature working under my direction, O son of Kunti, is producing all moving and non-moving beings. From Prakriti, or material nature, comes so many varieties of living entities, including aquatics, plants, trees, insects, birds, animals, human beings, and demigods. Prakriti is the mother, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the father. Aham Bija Prada Pita. Prakriti can give us material bodies, but as the spirit souls, we are parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita in the 15th chapter, text 7. Mamai Pangso Jivaloke Jivabhuta Sanatana. The living entity, being part and parcel of God, is not a product of this material world. Therefore, the Lord is described in this verse as Atma Mula, the original source of everything. He is the seed of all existences, Bijam Mam Sarvabhutanam. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 14th chapter, text 4, the Lord says, Sarva Jyonishu Kuntiya Murtiya Sambhavantiya Tasam Brahma Mahat Yonir Ambija Prada Pitaha Pita. It should be understood that all living entities and all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. Plants, trees, insects, aquatics, demigods, beasts, birds, and all other living entities are sons or parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, but because they are struggling with different mentalities, they've been given different types of bodies. Manakshastani, Indriyani, Prakriti, Shtani, Karshati. Thus they have become sons of Prakriti or material nature, which is impregnated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Every living entity in this material world is struggling for existence. And the only salvation or relief under the cycle of birth and death in the evolutionary process is full surrender. This is indicated by the word Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So, Kshetrajnaya Namastuvyam Sarvadyakshaya Sakshane Purushayatma Mulaya Mula Prakritaye Namaha. So, Omagana Timinandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Miditam Yena Tezmai Shigurve Namaha. So this particular subject that's mentioned is dealt with extensively in the 13th chapter of the Gita, which describes knowledge, the object of knowledge, and the knower. And it was a very interesting subject matter. The 13th chapter of the Gita, of course, comes after the 12th chapter, which is about devotional service. And this 13th chapter describes basically the prakriti, the material nature, what the material nature is, what the living entity is, who the super soul is, and obviously the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so it is interesting that Krishna states in this chapter that both the material nature and the living entity are eternal. That may come as a shock to you. Of course, elsewhere in the Gita, Krishna states, bhutva bhutva pralayate. Then again and again, bhutva bhutva pralayate. This material nature is manifest, and again, it's unmanifest. So we're going to contrast that with being eternal. Of course, in the Western conception, the conception that the Abrahamic religions follow, there's a beginning and a middle and an end. And also, in their conception, the soul was created, and sometimes they think the soul can be destroyed, but usually not. Usually they just send the souls to hell or some nice place like that. Uh-oh. Where it's nice and warm. There's no winter in hell. They don't have to worry about heaters. But in the Vedic conception, we have the understanding of the nature of life, which is cyclical in this material world. And that's also described in the 13th chapter, that material nature is endlessly mutable. It's always changing. They can't hear? Testing. So the material nature is always changing. There's that pre-Socratic philosopher Heraclitus said, you can't step into the same river twice. Everything's always changing. The bodies are changing. Everything, like we have to renovate the building because that thing's disintegrated. There's everything changes in this world. Everything's different. Like the leaves have fallen off the tree. And then in the springtime, the leaves will come back on the trees. So That changing is there, but the material nature always exists. Even though sometimes there's a dissolution, sometimes there's a creation, the material nature will never cease to exist. And when it, during the time of the dissolution, it's the pradana, that means the unmanifested stage of the three modes of material nature. So that's the material nature. And of course, the living entity is eternal too. And we know that from many, many verses in the Gita. It's like Prabhupada quotes this verse, Mame Vamsa Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. Because we are Ansa, we are part and parcel of Krishna, we have the same nature as Krishna, therefore we are eternal. And then also, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanya, that's not from the Gita, of course. Chaitanya is Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yogadadati Kama. There's many eternals, and there's one supreme eternal, and we're the plural eternals, and the supreme eternal is maintaining the plural eternals, which happens to be us. So anyway, so the nature, and so nature is described as internal, and the living entity is described as eternal, and the interactions between the two are being described. They're not, of course, necessarily eternal. And the super soul is described, and then also Sankhya philosophy is described in the 13th chapter. Sankhya philosophy means the analysis of the different material elements, the perceptive senses, the active senses, the mind, the intelligence, the bhumirupo, the eightfold material elements like earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. So Sankhya philosophy is also there in the 13th chapter, which is really nice. And then Krishna describes, and that's what I want to read from the Gita. Krishna describes in the 13th chapter, when one understands these things, what sort of knowledge one gets. Because we said it's Prakriti and Purusha are being described, the living entities being described, and of course the living entities described as the knower of the field when he's Krishna conscious. Right now we're not the knower of the field. We think we are the field. Because the field is the material energy. So in the material world, we actually think we're the field, so we're not the knower of the field. We're absorbed in the field, but we're not the knower. Because the knower of the field needs to know that there's some difference. So the symptoms of knowing the field of activities and the knower are mentioned by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter, texts 8 to 12. And this is how we can judge whether we actually know or not the body. Actually, it's really interesting. These are secondary symptoms. Primary is to know you're not the body, to know that you're a servant of Krishna. But these secondary symptoms manifest, which are symptoms of knowledge as described here by Krishna. These secondary symptoms manifest to evidence or give evidence to the fact that we know we're not the body. And if you know you're not the body, you'll naturally exhibit these things. So I want to read about, I'm not going to read the Sanskrit. I'll read the translation of this, these several verses. And I could explain each word. We could give a class on each word. But and the first one is humility. Of course, humility means to understand, as Prabhupada described in the purport here, that Krishna is the owner of everything, that I don't own anything. Because the opposite of humility is to think I'm the controller. Ishwaraham aham bhogi siddhoham balavan sukhi. I'm the controller, I'm the center, I'm the enjoyer. So the real manifestation of humility is to understand that Krishna is the center, Krishna is the enjoyer, Krishna is the proprietor, and then we're his servants. That's what humility means, to understand that one's identity as being a servant, not as the master. And of course, one of the causes of anarthas is the byproducts of devotional service, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti. And that means that when one makes advancement in Krishna consciousness, sometimes that advancement counteracts the tendency towards humility because one becomes proud of his advancement. And one may say, for example, I'm so proud of my humility. I'm a very humble person. You know, as soon as you start to think that you're a humble person, you're not humble. So it's like a catch-22. That, you know, as soon as you become aware of your humility and you think it's humility, then you're not humble anymore. It's interesting. And then, of course, pridelessness is pretty much the same thing as humility. And then nonviolence. Nonviolence is an interesting word. It doesn't mean that one doesn't do something, let's say, that may cause someone some pain. It means, according to Prabhupada's definition, that one doesn't impede a living entity's spiritual progress. One acts in the best interest, and sometimes in the best interest of someone, there has to be a little bit of harshness, just like a parent. A parent has to sometimes chastise the kid. And the parent should not be accused by the child. You are being violent, Daddy. You're not following Krishna's instructions in the Gita. But actual nonviolence means not to impede someone's progress, either spiritually or materially. And sometimes that requires, like Arjuna, fighting in the battle of Kurukshetra. And in the ultimate instance, that was nonviolence. And then the next one is tolerance. All these different qualities that evidence our spiritual advancement, evidence of us knowing we're not the body. Because as soon as you know the body, as you think you're the body, then how can you be tolerant? How can you be tolerant? Matra, sparsha, stukontia, nyasa. Sitoshna sukha dukada gama payano nijash tamsa tiksha shivarata. How can you be tolerant of heat and cold, pleasure and pain, happiness and distress? Because you're thinking, I'm in distress, I'm happy, I'm hot, cold. So there has to be a level of spiritual advancement where one, this is also described in the Bhagavad Gita, one sees the body is doing this, this, and that, and you understand that you're not doing any of those things. You're just operating the body, just like one operates a car. You know, this is, of course, ABC, Krishna consciousness, that if one's driving a car, one doesn't think, you know, my wheels are hurting. I'm feeling all deflated because my wheels don't have enough pressure in them. I'm deflated. I'm depressed. I mean, of course, if one gets identified with the body, that's a different thing. If one identifies, I had that experience the other day of identifying with my car, that I was staying over someone's house. We were doing a program in Cary the other night, you know, last Friday. And then some man comes up and says, Maharaj, I'm sorry. I said, why are you sorry? He said, I scratched your car. And immediately I felt like a tight sensation in my stomach, anxiety, all sorts of things occurred because of my attachment. And then he said, don't worry, I'll pay for it. And then I felt better. So, because that's because of attachment. So as soon as one becomes attached to anything, then there's anxiety. When, like, you know, like, for example, a typical anxiety is the lady is combing her hair and the hair comes out of the comb. And there's anxiety. Oh, my God. One looks in the mirror and sees whatever. There's anxiety. So tolerance and simplicity. Simplicity means basically not accepting any more than is absolutely necessary for maintaining the body. It's like if you have a car, I mean, or the example Prabhupada gives of the bird in the cage, you know, you don't just like decorate the cage and neglect the bird. So you just deal with the car or deal with your body in a way to keep it running, but minimize what you have to do. And then approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness. Also understanding why you have to be clean if you know you're not the body. Why not be dirty? I'm not the body. I mean, why take care of the damn thing? Because according to the Bhagavad Gita, the 13th chapter, the material nature belongs to Krishna. Krishna's the proprietor. And so if Krishna's the proprietor, you're going to be better at cleaning it then obviously you were up elsewhere before that. It's like many devotees, they were hippies before, and as hippies, many times they didn't take a bath for I don't know how long. Hippies would generally smell. I mean, just like one time I went to a rainbow festival, and it was so smelly I had to run out of there. I brought Gopal with me, and I just like, oh my God, I got to leave. Just one day. So, and then, of course, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the object of sense gratification. I'm going to go a little more quickly. Absence of false ego. These are all evidences that you understand you're not the body and understand that you're a servant of Krishna. That's why it's called knowledge here. Let's see. Absence of false ego, perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment again, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amidst pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, Krishna's referring to himself, aspiring to live in a solitary place. That doesn't mean that one simply wants to go to the forest and live on top of the mountain without any devotees, but one wants to live in a place with association of devotees. As the acharyas say that one of the most miserable situation, actually Ramananda Roy said this in the Ramananda Samvada, is the most miserable situation is being separated from the devotees or living with non-devotees. So to live with devotees is actually fulfilling the purpose of living in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. And listen to what Krishna says at the end of this verse. He says, all these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. Wow. Everything else is ignorance. All right. So let's take that literally. So, you know, I shouldn't learn how to do anything in this world. It's all ignorance. But the Isopanishad says that there's a necessity to learn ignorance, not to be ignorant. Avidya, avidya. We have to cultivate knowledge about ignorance to live in this material world. I mean, if you don't know how to drive a car, or, I mean, not necessary for everybody, but if you don't know how to, you know, brush your teeth, take care of the body, do practical things in this world, you know, turn on the water faucet when you're cooking, then how are you going to be able to serve Krishna? So you need to cultivate, I mean, if you don't learn your ABCs, you know, alphabet, how to read, how to write, then how are you going to be able to serve Krishna? So there's a necessity to learn about this material world, which is temporary. Necessity to have some knowledge about this material world. However, any more knowledge than necessary is a waste of time. And that puts you in ignorance. So it's very, very important. So anyway, so this is a major topic that's discussed in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And let's see, what other topics are discussed there? Oh, yeah, the super soul. Is that interesting? The super soul is defined in various ways in the 13th chapter. Of course, there's the universal super soul, the Purusha avatar, the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And then there's the Shiradakshaya Vishnu, who is the super soul in everyone's heart. And one interesting verse in the 13th chapter is the super soul is divided and undivided simultaneously. Divided in the undivided. What does that mean? That means that that super soul is not really situated in the material nature. Neither is the soul. The soul is not in the material nature. That's another verse in the 13th chapter, that the soul doesn't mix with matter. Doesn't mix, but it's identifying itself as matter because of the ignorance. And the supersoul is certainly not mixing with matter. The supersoul is certainly not in the material nature. The example Prabhupada gives in the 13th chapter in one of his purports is that the supersoul is like the reflection, how the supersoul manifests in this material world, like the reflection on a body of water, like the moon or the sun being reflected on a body of, or in a body of water. So in this way, the supersoul is everywhere. Its presence, his energy is everywhere, but he's not mixing with the material nature. So in other words, when you do an open heart surgery, you're not going to see the supersoul or the soul. I mean, the soul is described as 1/10,000, the tip of the hair, which basically means no material dimension. So how are you going to perceive the presence of the soul? How are you going to perceive the presence of the supersoul? Therefore, no matter what the scientists do with all their examinations, because all they can perceive is the eightfold material elements, at least the grosser material elements, not even the subtle material elements. Even some scientists say there's no ether. I remember when I took a course in physics, basic physics, in the university, they said, we did this experiment and we determined that there was no ether. Of course, ether basically means space. What they did is they shot a light beam or a laser beam at right angles, and they said if there's ether, it should move the laser beam. I forget the exact experiment. And they came to the conclusion that there was no ether. So they can't even perceive subtle material elements like ether. What to speak of mind? I mean, they can perceive the brain. The brain is simply the filter through which the mind expresses itself in this world. Sometimes they think that there is no mind, or the mind and the brain are exactly the same. Because if you alter the brain chemically, it alters the consciousness of the person expressed in this world. That's true. Just like if you have a white light, then if you put a colored filter in front of the white light, it changes the manifestation of the white light. But it doesn't change the white light. The white light is a white light. You can put a green filter, blue filter, purple filter in front of it, pink filter, and it manifests differently. But it doesn't change. You can't say the source of the light is the filter. That's kind of stupid. In the same way, people say the source, or the scientists say the source of consciousness is the brain. But that's just the filter that filters the consciousness and manifests the consciousness in a certain way. So consciousness is consciousness is superior. So anyway, so the supersoul and the soul are not actually mixing with the matter. They're manifest through the matter. Just like when I'm operating a computer, because I don't play video games. But if I was playing video games, it's not that I'm actually mixing with the elements of the video game, but I'm identifying with the video game. It's like this game that was very popular, Pokemon. You know, people would go around looking for these different characters all over the place, you know, Pokemon characters, and capturing them and getting points and everything like that. But they didn't actually exist. It was like I was at a GVC meeting and I put on the Pokemon app and I told one of the devotees, hey, there's a character on your back. There's a Pokemon on your back. He said, where? So because of the illusion, I was thinking it was like that. So it's just like that. When you see through a certain computer, it was, of course, augmented reality, then you see things in a way that are not real. So we are actually seeing like that. So anyway, so the supersoul is described as being reflected in various, everyone's heart and every atom. It's like the sun is reflected in various bodies of water. So that's another item about the knowledge, the knower, material energy, the soul, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead that's there in the 13th chapter of the Gita. So I think that's about it. Let's see, what else? Put this down. Oh yeah, another thing Krishna says in the Gita, everything, one who's in knowledge sees everything in this world as the field, the knower, and the knower of the field, including the super knower and us, the knower. And he says there's nothing else in this world. It's just the field, the knower, and the knower. One should always, the injunction he gives at the end is one should always see the super soul always see the super soul wherever one is. And of course, this is also in the sixth chapter of the Gita. Krishna says that Yomam Pashati Sarvatra, Sarvam Chamai Pashati, Tashaham Napranashyami, Sachame Napranashyati. He says that one who sees me everywhere, this is a famous verse, one of my favorite verses. One who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me is never lost to me, nor am I ever lost to him. Anyway, so this is the 13th chapter of the Gita. So any questions or comments? Yes. Change is constant. Because in the spiritual world, I mean, there's no material change in the spiritual world. You know, like if you're in Goloka Vrindavan, you're always in Goloka Vrindavan. And you have some associates there. You're always with those associates. I mean, sometimes there's separation, sometimes there's different pastimes. But in the material world, I mean, it's very sad because we want it to be the same because we're attached to certain individuals, we're attached to a particular situation, we're attached to our car. You know, it's like when I looked at my car yesterday and I saw the scratch on it. You know, what? It's a big scratch. It's a dent. I saw the scratch on it. I just thought, I want to see it the way it's supposed to be, you know. But the material nature is just not that way. We just want things to be stable and predictable. Yeah, we want stability. We want predictability. We want security. We want safety. You know, just like that, the other day, when I was in Vrindavan, I saw one of my godbrothers who's very sick, you know, Gundagrahi Maharaj, and he has cancer. And he just didn't look the same as he did before. And it's just like, it caused me pain to see that. The change is actually the entropy in this world where things start to fall apart. I mean, we wouldn't mind change if things get better. But the nature of this material world, according to the scientists, this word entropy means that things fall apart. And we don't want them to fall apart. We want them to get better. That's a natural psychology, a natural tendency of the soul. Krishna consciousness changes. We like that change because it gets better as you go on. But everything else just falls apart. Very disturbing when computers fall apart, when cars fall apart, the body falls apart. As that song goes, the worms crawl in and the worms crawl out in your stomach. Anyway, it's just like, it's so disturbing. At least it's disturbing to me. Jai. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Radha Gaurakananda ki jai.